So tonight's guest speaker is Sean Nanop. I'll let him get settled in on that throne over there. Yeah, on the floor. You can lean on that. Yeah, you can sit on the... Did you want a chair or you're okay? Oh, okay. So while she's getting that ready, I'll just give a little introduction. On my Googling, apart from reading that he grew up in Three Springs before moving to Perth, a word that kept popping up was connection. Sean is so connected, Sean's connected to his ancestors, Sean's purpose is to connect people, etc., etc. And recently I got to go to a few of his Welcome to Countries and to a workshop organised by his organisation called Wisdom in Your Life. And I was really able to see and experience how Sean embodies that word. He's really able to get people to somehow flow and connect. So talking about the rhythm of the land tonight, hopefully Sean will be able to show us how to get back to that place of connection and oneness, a place that Aboriginal people call, is it Quinjan? Yep. Thank you, Sean.
It's a pleasure to be here. And it's something that I personally love doing, is talking about this wonderful place we call Australia, and we go beyond the calling of in Australia. So for us, we see the planet is our home, and as I go into the next phase of talking with you and connecting, hopefully, a rhythm to what I believe is available for everyone. We go into this place we call the universe, and the universe is a place where frequency and energy is one of the most powerfulest languages that is spoken. And for us as Aboriginal people, if not people all over the world, if I can be as bold to say, that when we get in tune with that frequency, then we seem to be able to allow ourselves to flow in a way that has magic, and it's exciting, and we have this sense of vulnerability in some ways and a sense of power in another, and then all of a sudden we see this distance. And when there's vastness, some people find that quite a challenge, but then some people find that a place that they love to be in. So Aboriginal culture, for me today, to talk to you in any way, shape or form about the history of Aboriginal spirituality or cultural beliefs, it's about getting in tune with a frequency of energy that allows us to flow. So just then I gave a little bit of silence in the room. And that silence is allowing a space for your thoughts or your energy to just soften in some ways with what I just said. So for me to teach you something that was, for me, was one of the hardest things to grasp is silence. I can only for a moment give you a sense of what that was like to go out onto country. And then you can get a little bit more of an in-tune relationship with my sense of understanding what Aboriginal culture is. So my uncle was always around in my life, and he was in the distant. He wasn't always in our family gatherings and our family connection. He just seems to come and go. And I knew of my uncle's connection, and his name's Noel Nanop. Does anyone know Noel Nanop at all? Okay, all right. So I now can give you a little bit more about Uncle Noel that he may not share, yeah? But my uncle would travel, and I gather when one person is in a position to maintain a sense of our culture, he may not have realised just how lucky I was that he was able to do that. And when he travelled across country through Calm, he worked up in the Northern Territory into Kimberley and also into the Pilbara, then down into the Yamatji country, and then down here into Perth. into the Noongar country, Biberman. And he worked tirelessly in understanding what the land and how to manage land. So who better to learn from were the local indigenous people of the wonderful country that had been managing this land for thousands upon thousands of years. How far do we go back? Well, I can help you with that in a few moments. So when he started to gain this sense of connection, it automatically had a space for me then to be able to step into and say, thank you very much, Uncle. I can't wait to experience exactly what you've been able to maintain as part of our journey of connecting to country. And so when I came from the country, which is Three Springs, it's a little town. Anyone know where Three Springs is? It's a little town. And you make your way across to Eneabba and you're basically in line with the coast there. And then you come back down to Perth. It's about a 4-hour drive. And I came from there. I was up to 15 years of age. I lived there and basically I was a country boy. And everything was about just having fun. And as a young person, I was very lucky. I guess there was some things that really stopped Aboriginal culture from being present in my life at that age. But end of the day, I had a pretty good upbringing. So then I came to Perth and then I went to live at Scarborough. When I lived at Scarborough, I was the only Aboriginal boy at Scarborough High School. There was two others, but they were fair skinned, so they weren't really saying that they were Aboriginal anyway. They always say, Sean, because I'd be going, you black fella, man. And they'd be going, shh, shh. I'd be like, why? Why don't you want to say you're Aboriginal? And that's when I really started to see how, you know, stepping outside of a little cocoon, so can I say a cocoon in Three Springs? And then coming to the city, I really then was confronted with this huge shift. And there was so much division. There were so many labels put on so many people around me. I noticed people suffering. And some people thriving. But the balance was just really not healthy. And as I grew up, I always wanted everyone to be connected. It was just a natural thing for me. So as I went to Scarborough High School, I realised that there was something about being Aboriginal that everyone sort of feared. Because everyone would be like, oh, you're the Aboriginal man. Well, yeah, we're lucky we got you at Scarborough High School, so we've got to go and fight the other schools. And I'm going, fight the other schools? What do you mean? Oh, yeah, you've got a big family mob. They won't mess with us. And I'm going, my big family mob? What are you talking about? And they'd be like going, yeah, yeah, they'll be scared now when we go to fight the other schools. So sure enough, we had these little fight things. It wasn't really a fight or it wasn't really anything. It was quite funny, to be honest with you, because when I went from Scarborough High School to Balgar High School, that's when I discovered that there was just a great big imbalance. And I went, wow. This is really confronting. Because I used to be a surfer. And I wore all the cordling colours and I was really, you know, all the cordling and rip curl and I had all the surf rainbow colours on. And in my time, and I guess you all know I'm only 25 years of age, as I mean Anusha would have explained to you, I look older. But when I went there, everyone was, in that era, was very hard on any individual group. So I was considered gay because I had colour on me. And my cousin said to me, Sean, you got to go home and get changed because you can't come to school like that. And I said, why is that? I'm a surfer, man. Oh, don't do that. I'm not going, why, man? That's our thing. He goes, no, you're no longer a skeg. Don't ever call yourself that. A skeg is the fin of a surfboard. And he said, don't do that, because whatever happens to you happens to us. And when you come in here, brother, there's gangs, man, and they don't really handle that sort of stuff really well. And our families can be in danger because you're wearing this colourful clothes. And I went, wow, this is really crazy. I said, oh, come on, bro, don't worry about it. I'm okay, I can look after myself. So sure enough, I was walking down the hallways of Balga High School, and you could imagine how many times I got bumped and pushed and called everything around, you know, some names that we're not really like to mention, but it wasn't very good, and I ended up having a lot of fights. And I soon realised that it didn't matter if you're Aboriginal or you're part of a big family group, or if people hurt people, hurt people. And if they're not hurting other people, they're hurting themselves through drugs and through cutting or through gambling or through shopping, maybe a little bit too much. But people generally will push themselves, and if they're hurt, they'll hurt in some way, shape or form. This is what I learnt later on in life. So when I walked down Balga, when I entered Balga, I had to learn to fight. So who better than the tactical response? My friend, his brother, was one of the head police officers in Perth, and invited me and him to come down and train at East Perth. Glenn Miller was the gentleman. He's passed on now, one of the most gracious men. If I look at Buddha behind me, this man would walk into the room, and even though he was a very high distinguished person in the community, he would say hello to everyone and treat everyone with the most kindest respect. I noticed that straight off the mark. He'd be in the car park talking to the groundsmen. He'd be in the kitchen talking to all the people there, and people were trying to find him, and he was having conversations, talking to everyone. But he was this very high police, very close to the commissioner, he's very high. And then when he came into the room and trained us, I had even more respect for him. So I had a number of teachers as I went through my life. And when he learnt things in his life, I didn't realise how important that teachings in his life was going to be a part of mine. So many people in my life have been not really aware that whatever environment that they've been nurtured in to give them great wisdom or great sense of being was automatically shifted to me. And I can't say to you how humble I've been in my life to accept and embrace this. So it doesn't matter if you're from Hindu or if you're Buddhism or if you're from Christian faith or you're from the Indian people of America or it could be Chinese, or it doesn't matter who you are. I believe that somewhere in their teachings, there's a sense of unity and love for everything. And I've been very fortunate. So when I trained in martial arts, I thought to myself, well, if I get to learn how to do martial arts, then I can protect myself and others around me. And the opportunity came very quickly. There was this young little boy getting picked on by the Aboriginal gang, and he was only a little chubby boy, and they had unfortunately pushed him into a tree and had his pie, and they were throwing it at him, and he was screaming and crying. And I looked over and I noticed everyone running across there, and I looked and saw him and I saw what was happening, so I quickly rushed over, and everyone was laughing, the whole school. The teachers weren't even doing anything. And in that moment, I said to myself, without consciously saying it, someone has to do something. And I did it. I stepped forward and said, hey, and I pushed the Aboriginal fellow to the side, and I pulled the young fellow to the side. He grabbed hold of me and he was crying and shaking. And he says, please help me. And I said, it's all good, brother. I'm here now. You're safe. And this Aboriginal guy and all the boys stepped forward, and I can tell you their family last name, but I won't, but I can tell you they weren't very nice back in my day. And he said to me, Nana, don't ever get in my way, brother. I said, what you're doing is wrong, man, and I've had it up to here with your bullying and picking on these little boys and people with hair going this way, or, you know, Indians, Chinese, Lebanese, people who can't speak English, you know, you're a bully. And I've had enough. And my cousin's to the side going, sure, no, stop. And I said to him, this is it, mate. Maybe me and you have a last sort of bit of fun, and whoever's last one standing gets to rule the roost. What do you reckon? He said, let's do it. So he attacked me, and I pulled him down and I held him. And I said, stop, I'm not going to hurt you. I don't want to hurt you. And I restrained him. And I let him go, and he attacked me again. He said, "Sean, who you and whose army is going to stop us from destroying you, bro?" An Indian guy walked behind me. A Chinese guy walked behind me. A Lebanese guy walked behind me. The people with the hair going this way and the things sticking out that way and the different colours and all the people that you that were bullied for years and years at that school all walked behind me. And the words that echo, what we do for the small things, we do for the big things. If you show compassion, hate, sadness, pain, finds it very, very hard to live around people with love, unity. And this is exactly what happened that day. So I said to him, I said, "Come on, man. Let's shake on it and let's leave it here." And he says, "No, it won't happen. Never. You've insulted me and my family." And he then ran off and everyone dispersed. And so I went straight to his dad's house, and just down the road from me. Away. And I went in there and I said, "Hey, uncle, your son's coming home after school. We had a bit of a thing happen. And I need to tell you what happened so then you know that I wasn't trying to hurt him or be disrespectful to your family group. Please don't come to my mum and dad's house and do what you do. Can you tell your family I'm sorry, but I just don't like him bullying people." And he said, "So you didn't do anything? You didn't hurt him? No one jumped in? No, uncle? All right, Sean, go home. Tell your mum and dad everything's fine. I'll sort this out on my end." So he came to school the next day and I sat up all night, and my mum and dad were very angry and all my uncles and aunties were very disappointed in me because my cousins went home and go, "They're going to come through and destroy uncle's house and aunties. We better get ready for them." And I sat and waited. No one came. The next day I got to school and sure enough he came over and he put his hand out in front of the whole school because they were waiting for the aftermath, and it was a big talk. Came out, shook his, put his hand in and said, "I'm sorry. It'll never happen again, brother." And I shook his hand and I said, "That's all I ask, brother. Everyone has the right to come to school and feel like they are able to learn as much as we all do." So with that action or that movement, I then had a little place at the back near the basketball courts there, and there were kids coming to school that never came to school. They started coming to school. And the teachers would come over and go, "Sean, is it okay for them to hang out with you?" I said, "Of course." And one little fella, turned around and said, "You're in the nanny gang. We're all in the nanny gang now." And I'm like going, "Oh, okay, well, if you want to call it a gang." But end of the day, just glad that you guys feel safe. And any problems, come and talk to me and all our brothers and we'll take care of it. So the sad thing about this story that I'm telling you is that if I gave you the information from the get-go that I went out on country and I just automatically just received great love and nurturing from Great Mother Buddha, the land we come from, I definitely need to warm you up to it, because then it may not seem so profound that I got this enlightenment, and I didn't just walk out there and just have it. It was a journey, and this is just one of them. So when I look back in that time, the whole school changes. The teachers were coming in and they were like really scared. We had teachers. I don't know if anyone went to Belga High School. I'm 46 years of age, to be honest with you. I know it's a shock. But going to Belga High School was a tough one for teachers in that time. And so I was asked to go and sit in the classrooms just to make them feel safe. And it was really, it was a blessing. But I intimidated the intimidator. I didn't realise I had pain and sufferings in my life that really I was a bit confused about. Because when my grandmother, she was a wonderful woman, very strong in the communities. Her name's Alison Nana, Alice Bassett Nana. And she's from the Nullumbah Injibani country in the Pilbara. She was born in Yira McAdoo, out there near Millstream, Roebourne. And she was taken down here to Moore River Settlement as a little girl. My other grandmother was born in Jari country out at Halls Creek. And she was taken from there to Beagle Bay Mission as a little girl and separated from her family. My great-grandmother went straight into Alice Springs. That was the last known footprint of her journey. We don't know what happened to her after that. So when she went to Broome, she married a Japanese man. So Shiozaki is my grandfather's last name. Sujuka Shiozaki. And he came, Sujura. He was Shinomizaki, which is Japan. It's a little island just below the south of Japan. Married him, and then unfortunately what happened was the war happened, and my grandfather and my grandmother and my uncles became prisoners of the war, and they were taken to Melbourne. And they were left there for 4 years. And so straight away, we had another separation from country. And then on the way back around on the ships, my grandmother was pregnant with my mum, and basically got to Perth and said, "This baby's coming, we're staying here." And my mum was the first girl to be baptised at the Clontarf Boys' College there, you might know of, when she was a little girl. So to give you a sense of understanding that when my grandmother, we were playing once, and I remember running up to my nan and saying, "Nan, what was it like when you were a little girl? Did you catch tadpoles and did you have fun and run through the bush? And did you do the same thing as us?" And she would say to me, "My granny, always look forward. Don't ever look back, because then you'll get stuck." And I'm saying, "What do you mean? Did you have fun? Did you run around like we did?" And in that instant, though she never said that she was taken from her family and abused in these places of nurturing, she never said it. I felt the energy and I knew something was wrong. Post-traumatic stress, they call that, syndrome. So even though I wanted to help other people, as soon as I seen or noticed that someone was getting bullied or picked on or anything like that, I would go in and defend, and I'd put my life on the line and everyone around me. Without a second thought. There was no warm-up. As soon as I seen someone bullying someone, that was it. And my friends were going, "Sean, stop. This is pretty dangerous. These guys are pretty scary." And I'm saying, "But they're bullies, and they need to be shown and taught." But it was an opportunity for the hurt inside me to hurt others. And there was a tug of war there. So all of a sudden, my first child came, and his name's Mostyn. And he saved my life, because I was confronted with this great question. "Sean, are you going to be a father now?" In other words, you've got your gifts to give to your son. And deep down, I knew that this anger and this sense of disconnection inside me was not settled. So for this moment, I wore it very heavily. And at some stage, I had to find a way to figure out I didn't want to give this pain to him. But I didn't even know what it was. So I thought, maybe I need to go on country and be with my uncle. And he can teach me about understanding balance and how to bring culture into my life. So I called my uncle up. And I said, "Uncle," and he says, "Hello, nephew. I've been waiting for your call." Because we don't always call. So there was just a very odd moment for me to call him. "What can I do for you, my boy?" "Uncle, I need culture. I need to figure out things very, very quickly. So can we go out onto country and you can teach me culture, then I can find balance and I can be a father to my son?" "Fantastic. Let's go." So as we went out onto country, we got out there and there was no one else with us. It was just me and my uncle at the time. And I sat down around the fire and I said, "All right, Uncle, I'm over fighting to get people to understand about our culture. It doesn't seem to be working, Unc. Now I need to understand it so then I can deliver it by voice and I can fight back and educate everyone. Because this fighting is really bad, Uncle. He says, okay, my nephew, I want you to just do me a favour. Yes, Uncle, what is it? I'll do anything. What's that, Uncle? Shh. Oh, okay, you want me to do silence? Yes. So I sat around the fire. And I'll do it so you can see it. I sat down and I'll be quiet. Fantastic, my son. Paul, make me a cup of tea. Yes, I want to know about the culture, Uncle. Tea, I gotta make you a tea. Okay, time for sleep. What do you mean, sleep? I got home and I got to my dad and I said, Dad. He goes, oh, I'm so glad you went out on country with your uncle. It's about time someone took the cause. Not many of my nephews, my cousins or brothers or any of his family had done it, or nieces, only me. Dad, that was just a waste of time. What do you mean a waste of time, my boy? Dad, I went out there and he told me nothing. He went like this. And we sat there for like an hour, then an hour and a half, 2 hours, sat there. But I cried, Dad. I don't know why. Well, son, when you're ready, the answers will come. Well, I called Uncle, and I was ready because I made the call, and nobody else had done it. So why is it that he's disrespecting me, Dad? That's disrespect, don't you think? To spend 2 days out on country and sit around and do this, and I made tea. We sat around, I made the fire, I cooked the dinner, I put the tents up, I put the tents down, I drove him everywhere, and he never told me nothing about no tree, no culture, no wind, no spirit, nothing. Now, you're his oldest brother, and I'm going to ask you, in culture, I know that he's disrespecting you, Dad. So next time I go, you better have this talk to Uncle. And make sure you sort it out so he can teach me something when I go out there instead of just using me to make tea and coffee and put the tent up, put the tent down. So we had this great big group. We went out there on country. I put all the tents up. I was really proud. I made everyone tea. You know how many ways to make tea? You dunk it, nephew, 1, 2. Then you take it out. Don't do any more. The temperature, make sure that you, when it's boiled, take it off, leave it, just give it a few more moments, maybe 2 to 3 minutes, and then put the tea bag in, take it out, and then bring it to me. I don't know how many ways you can have tea, but I tell you what I learned very quickly. And even when they sipped it, oh, no, that's not right, it's too hot. Oh, no, that's not right, you've dunked it too many times. Well, I did exactly what you said, Auntie. go and make me another one and just tip it out. I could have just put more water into it. I put it with cold water. Now I've got to go and boil the water again. Oh, woe is me. So I did everything everyone wanted. And then all of a sudden, we were going to go and he was going to teach everyone some stuff, right? Nephew, yes, uncle, go and sit under the tree. Sit under the tree. Yes, nephew. But okay, uncle. I go and sit on the tree. I sat there for about an hour or so, and he came back. He said, nephew. Yes, uncle. What did you learn? Oh, I was supposed to learn something. So you never said to learn anything. So I really wasted my time, really. I just sat here because I didn't learn nothing. Well, if you're not ready, my nephew, then you're not ready. Well, you taught everybody else. Everybody else, you showed them the country and culture and the spirit. But hey, I sit under a tree, I make the tea, I put the tent up, I put the tent down, I make everybody else comfortable. Oh, woe is me. So for 3 days, I drove everyone around, made tea, sit under the tree. What did you learn? Nothing. That's what I learned, uncle. I'm just being used. You're using me. Okay, nephew, let's go. Oh, yeah, okay. Where do you want me to drive to now, uncle? What fire do you want me to put on now? What tea? Where do you want me to put all the tents? Nobody put the tents up. It was just me. Oh, the world is on my shoulders. So this went on for about 2.5 years. It wasn't a 2-week thing or 4 months thing or a year thing. This went on for 2.5 years. I would disappear and say how bad my uncle was, run him down to everybody. He doesn't know culture. He don't know how to teach us anything. And all he could say to me, nephew, you're not ready. When you're ready, then it'll all appear. What did you see? What did I see? What am I seeing? I don't know, a tree? Is that what you want? Well, if you can't see it, nephew, then you're not ready. Then a woman came into my life, and her name is Rosalind Snyder, who's my business partner today. 17 years ago when my son was born, that's when the world hit me. And I was lucky enough she was in my life. And it took me 2.5 years for her to get me to acknowledge anything about my life. So this journey that I was on wasn't so easily found so quickly in any way, shape or form. I was pretty stubborn. I thought I knew everything. So there I was sitting with this woman, Rosalind Snyder, and she had this wonderful, she's a psychologist, 8 years. She studied psychology and she's been doing it for about 20-something years now. Amazing patience. Amazing patience my uncle had. Amazing patience my mum and dad have. Mum not so much, she's a bit more pushy. Where my dad would be like, it's okay, son, when you're ready. Okay, dad. So the day came, finally. We're driving out to York. Does everyone know York? Yeah, a little town that way. We're about 15 k's out. And my uncle says to me, nephew, do you see it? Yes, uncle, I see it. And in that moment, I remember the first breath that came out of his mouth. It went... And he turned and he looked at me and he says, what do you see, nephew? I see salmon gum tree, uncle. Do you know how many times my uncle would drive me out there and I'll be waiting? I'm like, I know he's going to ask me any moment now, do I see it? And I'll be saying, helicopter, tree, bird, what am I supposed to be seeing? I have no idea. And I just said, no, I don't see it. I just gave up. I said, salmon gum tree, uncle. And the air came out of his breath again. And he just, and I cried my eyes out. I see it, Uncle, I see it. And he says, yes, nephew, salmon gum tree. I said, how is it that I could not have seen this, Uncle? How is it all this time, 2.5 years of driving out here, hearing you say that, and took me this long to learn that? He said, tell me, what else have you learned? I said, Uncle, I remember now, sitting under that tree, I remember the yellow sand, I remember the grey sand, I remember the granite, I remember the limestone, I remember the ants. There was black ants, there was red ants, and there was bull ants. I was really angry that you made me sit next to a certain tree. You know that tree, Uncle, that one on the day? He goes, yeah, I know which one. I also remember the birds. You used to rush me. Remember we used to drive so fast, you would say, come on now, we've got to go. I'm like, going, what have we got to race for? Where are we going? Sit under a tree again, Uncle? And you were looking out the window. Quickly, we've got to get there, nephew. And you're looking for the sea breeze. You were looking for the easterly. You're looking for the northerly. I remember this time of the season, Uncle. And I was always questioning, what is he looking for? What am I with someone who's crazy? And I remember the small birds jumping around, and then all of a sudden the big birds appeared, and they all disappeared when that breeze came in because they were all circling. I remember at certain times of the morning when we used to get to a certain spot, and I remember the sun coming up, and you made me sit there. I could see all the little butterflies and the little insects coming out, and as they were coming out, then the chitty chitty come out. I remember his name because and we call it jitty jitty in some areas. It will tell you where you're from. And then I remember them dancing around, and then you look up into the tree and you see those other birds coming in, wadong, which is the crow. And he'd be dancing around, the chitty chitty started to fight them because they got a nest not far away. I know now why there's a nest in certain trees, Uncle. And he says, how do you know? Because I remember seeing all the flies around the little nest. And I was wondering, wow, look at all the flies around that nest. He said, nephew, you underestimate yourself. You're learning every moment of your life. At some stage, you just have to get in the flow of nature, and the answers come like that. Give yourself a break, my boy. Try not to think you need to know everything straight away. Allow yourself to be still. Allow yourself to be internally free. And now that your mother, your great mother, the land that gave us all life, is more relevant to you, then my job becomes so much easier. Any mothers here? Yeah. So what happens is, remember the first moments. Remember the first moment when your baby kicked you in your tummy? And you had this baby in your tummy for a while. And it's an idea to have a baby in your tummy, as I've been told. But when you have a baby in your tummy, but to know that it's in there is one thing, but to feel it's a different thing, right? And when you feel it, what we used to do, we used to mark it with art, song, dance, language, story. When the baby comes from internal to external, we mark that place with art, song, dance, language, story. The placenta is buried next to a very centered tree. That'll be the tree for that young boy or girl. Whenever it's upset, they will rub it like a peppermint tree or a tea tree or something like that to invoke happiness and remind it that, you know, there are things around it. Though it's sad, it can be all of a sudden smelling that to promote happiness back into its being. It's marked without song, dance, language, story. You see, when you've come out of your mother's womb, you've heard the mother's heartbeat. For 9 months or 10 months. And you felt your mother's womb. So the warmth and the tension. Because you expanded. Then you've come out of your mother's womb and all of a sudden you scream because your lungs fill up with all this oxygen. And the bigger the scream, the better the strength of the lungs, right? As soon as the baby screams, all the family in the waiting room or the family that are out in the bush, they hear it. And what do? Yes. My baby's alive. And they hug and cry and celebrate the first cry. Art, song, dance, language, story. The baby's then put on the mum's chest and then she smells mum. Then she tastes mum's milk. You see, energy was your greatest first movement, i.e. the universe. Because your great mother, the Buddha, the land we stand, we call that mother, mum, the land, Buddha. But she had a great mother, and that's the universe, Big Bang or whatever you might call it. So energy is your greatest language you'll ever, ever speak. The second one is a smell, taste, touch, hear and see. But the seeing comes way later. So whenever you see a sunset, generally you close your eyes and you try to absorb it. Whenever you hug someone, you close your eyes so you can absorb it. And we're going backwards into everything we do when it comes to reincarnating ourselves in the daily ritual. So imagine when you wake up tomorrow morning, you've come out of a bed. Some like very tight beds, some like very loose beds. Some, as me, you've got to move, you know. But you've come from that place where it was very much a space for you to feel this vastness. And all of a sudden it became tight and restricted. You had to move. So then you get up out of the bed and you yawn. And everyone goes, he's up or she's up. Yes, all right, the day's begun. Oh, I don't want to see my eyes. Every day is an opportunity to be reborn, reconnect, reevaluate. And we do that with our first breath. So the baby then is taken and put in a gur in the ground with ochre and ash, ash being sterile, and they put him into the ground. And ochre is to acknowledge the oldest spirit. Because Aboriginal people are spiritual people. And basically, to get into a spiritual content, art, song, dance, language, story now becomes the most relevant way to communicate in a sense of spirituality. People go, what is it about your spirituality? And I'm slowly getting there, as you know. The time is going to be our enemy, and I'll slowly but surely push things a little bit more faster in a few moments. So when the child is put into the ground, it's left. Every mammal that's born on this earth has a spirit child connect itself to you in the Wadjuk Biberman language that we have down here. If you're here on this country, we call this place here Wadjuk. If you go to Mora, you're in Yuit country. If you go to Jilton, you're in Amangu country. If you go to the side and go over the hill, you're in a place called Northern, which is Balladong country. You go over to the side of them, Nyakanyaki country, which is Meriden. Then you go below them, you're in Williamstown, which is Wilman country. Then you go below them, you're in a place called Gangfang. That's a place called we call Collie. Then you go to the side of them, you're in Narangarup, which is a place we call Gurang. And then you go to Wadjuri country. And then you go all the way out to Esperance, you're in a place called Nunga country. Then you come around to a place called Albany, which is Menang country. Then Pibbermint country, which is below Mount Barker. Then you come around to a place that we call Wardandi country, where Nanup Blackwood River, where my last name comes from. And if you ask where we come from, it's usually in our name. And the name Wardandi came from the ocean, which is Wardan. We're the people that came out of the water. It's in our story. Our stories are passed down through trust, love, and acceptance and unity of all things. When we talk about one, we're talking about all. When we talk about one, we talk about all. Literally. Then you come up to a place we call Pinjarup, which is Binjarup, and back here in Wadjuk country. You see, once you smell it, taste it, touch it, hear it, see it, you can never, ever let it go. You just have to get out of the way of yourself and allow it to flow. And once you do that, game over. You cannot ever not talk in a way of love and unity and one. It's impossible. No matter how much pain that comes into your life or sadness, you will look it in the eye and say, I understand. When you are ready, you will see. And then you'll have patience. And you'll sit with harmony. And people say, how can you sit with great compassion when there's so much to be done? So many people to be saved. So many rivers to be unpolluted. How many forests that need to be reforested? But yet you sit still. And you allow that to be your greatest moment to change things. Why? How? Because as you know, it's not until you go through a certain journey that you will understand it personally. And then you can appreciate other people's journeys. I don't have to do the things my uncle did. But I can tell you now, whenever he speaks, I'm listening. And if I'm not listening at the time and I feel as though that it's not really sinking in, I thought, that's okay. I'm just not ready right now to appreciate what's been taught. So when we're on country now, it's an opportunity for me to stop and say to myself, what am I missing? What is it that I need to embrace that I can do within the few moments? So the child is left on the ground. It starts to cry and scream. Everyone walks away and leaves it. The baby is going, ah, where is everyone? I need to be connected. All of a sudden, it starts to remember, oh, I know this rhythm of this land. I know where this is. And it reminds itself that that spirit child needs to always maintain connection to country. And when the baby settles and they come back, pick it up, and it may not touch the ground for a while, but that area is marked with art, song, dance, language, story. So why I'm telling you this is because as we travel across country in the six seasons, as my uncle may have told you in the last time that he came, as we start to travel around, all of a sudden, your name? Yeah? Ellie? L. L. And we start to dance around, L. L. See how I'm kicking the ground? Remember you kick the ground, your mother's tummy? And what did you do? Oh, my baby's alive. When we kick Mother Buddha, we tell her, hey, we're still alive, Mum. Can you feel us? Yeah? And we sing for you. And you'd be like, hey, Ali's like, oh, wow, you baked me out. Ooh, you're dancing me. What you singing me for this time? Well, you kicked your mother here. This is the first energy that we knew you were coming. And we celebrate it. Don't you feel it? Yeah, I feel it. Then we dance a little bit. We move around again and we start dancing out again. What you dance me for this time? Well, this area here is where you came from Mum to from spirit world into real. Wow, right here. Oh, can you feel it? Oh, yeah, I'm ready. Why you dance me this time? Oh, this is your tree. Why you dance me today for again? You dance me. Yes, we dance here because this is where you were laying on country for the first time when you were separated from your spirit and you're now moving into your body. That's where we dance you there. Oh, wow, Murich. You dance me again? Yes. You mob dance me a lot. And you sing me, yes. And you paint me all the time. Yes, my niece. Why? Because when the bird dance, we dance. When the bird sings, we sing. Cool buddy. The magpie. The greatest team known to man. I had to do that, I'm sorry. But the sun comes up and the cool buddy sings and it takes us straight into culture. Before the sun rises, the child is constantly bathed in culture. And that may come another time when I tell you the creation story. The child, when it travels across country, they sing you against. Why? Because this is where you walked unaided. This is the first time you spoke your first language. This is the first time you sung. This is the first time you danced. This is the first time you caught your first tree, a fish. This is the first time you climbed a tree. This is the first time. Always the first. Because it's the moment of awakening. Whenever I go out to York, I can't help but cry. And my uncle will say to me and others, this is the moment my son met his mother, Buddha. Imagine him waiting for 2.5 years to hear me say the word, I see it, uncle. So today I gather to attune yourself to Aboriginal culture is an opportunity for you to allow yourself to be in the presence of her. So I know that many of you go out on country many times, and I'm hoping that when you go out there, ask yourself, what am I missing? Is there something that I need to see? And the greatest thing you can do in our belief is to have many other people with you to embrace the moment and turn to them and say, hey, what do you see? Because whatever you see, smell, taste, touch, or hear, it's you can only grasp 10% of it in any given moment. We think we really capture all this, what we see in this room, but we don't, because our minds just can't handle the great amount of information that you know that you're able to obtain. We're so much greater than we could ever believe we are. It's supposed to humble us. So by going out on the country, and being on country, you need to learn to survive that country. So when a young boy, the age of 10 or 8, and they stand there amongst all these great warriors or great survivors, and when they turn to the children, they say, what do you see, nephew? Because they can't see or take in everything. So they get the angle of a young boy who's got 10% to offer, and that could be the difference of survival and missing out on a good hunt. So that young boy always will feel connected and be a part of the family group because they've got something to offer. I got my 10%. You put your 10% in. You put your 10% in. What do you see? And all of a sudden, we're starting to put a landscape together, and we're able to move forward in a very humble way. Unity will overcome all. You have gifts. You have teachers. You've been taught. And in our culture, whatever's given to you must give away. Nothing is going to be yours forever. Only the memories. So if we could think of our life like being reborn, and also think of our life as if it was the last breath that we take, imagine what would you say right now, in this moment, if we were to have our last breath, who would you call? And what would you say to them? Let me give you an opportunity for me to speak maybe on your behalf. Hello? Hello? Who's this? It's your father. I just want to tell you I love you.
I want you to be happy. Can you do me the greatest gift you could ever give me? And love yourself. Because that's all I wish for you, my boy. Nothing but love. Tell your mother, your sisters, tell everybody. Be happy. So I'm not sure, and I hope that there's something that in the process of me giving you a sense of my journey will inspire you to want to go on country with us. Because there's a lot of our mother out there waiting for you. And she's just ever patient. Just like that tree out there. Standing, reaching for the stars. Always connected to her mother. It's her life force. Willing to give you everything that she has. You want wood? Here, take wood. If you want food, then by all means, use me as food. You want to be a home? Use me as your home? Then use me as your home. If you need fire, then here, have fire. If you want water, I'll give you water. If you give me your carbon, I'll give you back oxygen. I'll just give and give and give. So my uncle would always tell me, nephew, if there's one thing that I could ever wish for you, is for you to be like the tree. So that's my little bit of journey around culture. I really am humbled to come and be invited here today to share a few things about my life. I know my Uncle Noel has a long history with so many different people and a few of you in the room, and I'm very pleased to meet you and to share a little bit about my Uncle Noel's journey with myself. I think that when it comes to Aboriginal culture, if you know my uncle, he'll never stop giving. If you're willing to embrace a sense of love for anything around culture, then the door is always available and open. And I'd be very, very proud to offer the same in my own direction in my life. If you ever feel that there's anything that I can support you with when it comes to connecting to the land and maintaining unity with that, then I'd be very, very lucky if you did connect with me. So thank you very much for having me here tonight. It's been a bit of a hard one because I'm a Collingwood supporter, and I know Richmond and that have been, it was a tough last quarter, and right now I'm sort of, my phone's been ringing in my pocket for the last hour. So I do hope that I've given you much of my love for my uncle and my mum and culture. I know it's a bit of a tough one right now for me, so I do appreciate your patience, and may the rest of your journeys be one of celebration around every first moment that you come across. You embrace that and then pass it on to the next generation, because they need us. Well, thank you very much. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Does anybody have any questions or any thoughts? Did they? I told you. Shall we start singing the Collingwood song? But is there any questions or anything about Aboriginal culture? Oh, yes. Oh, cool.
Thank you so much for that wonderful talk. I'm a Scarborough girl myself.
Oh, yeah.
Go Scarborough High. Oh, yeah. Doesn't exist anymore, but never mind.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for that talk. I could hear a lot of underlying tones about connection coming through everything that you're saying, of course, as the introduction alluded to that. What I have a question about is I'd like your thoughts about the disconnection in our culture at the moment, like with the elderly people, with the young people, with international global communities, and how much of a concern is that? Is it more, are we perceiving it as being more now than it ever has, or is that just our perception? Because my mother used to say to me things were pretty bad back in the 50s, you know, in the 60s.
Yeah.
But is it getting worse? Is it, what can we do about it?
Well, I think we need to lead by example. And I would say that, you know, it can become very much, if we look at the world, to change something in the world on the other side, it seems like a never-ending story. We'd be running around chasing our tail in every community about how to get people to see the injustices that maybe we can put the blame onto government or to history, or we can put it to people with ego and greed. But the truth is that we can only control what's in front of us. And that really is my greatest gift. My uncle gave me, my father and my mother, was that to love yourself is so paramount. So the more we can really nurture our internal, then the immediate people around us can hopefully get a sense of safety that we may be on the right path. So to see the troubles that are happening in Belgrade or in Kandul with the youth and the separation with the grannies, with the stolen generation or whatever it is that's been such a struggle to see them suffering in, it's a daunting prospect. But you know, if I can come from a place where I know it needed someone, patience, and to be able to see that that we have to give people space, then that's all I can do. And to show my grannies that there is hope. That if we just allow ourselves to be nurtured and cared for, then hopefully people will come. And it's an old saying, if we build it, they'll come. But there's nothing better, nothing more truer. I think, yeah. So maybe the best thing we can do right now in this moment is to nurture ourselves and maybe run home and give our family a hug and say, you know, you're not invisible. I love you, I see you. I just want you to know that you mean a lot to me. That can be a really tough one for some. Is that okay? Yeah. Anybody else? Hey. Hey, Eddie.
How are
you, Sean? Good, mate. Now, we're in the final.
Sean, you said your uncle told you to allow yourself to be free inside, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, can you tell us more about that, what he meant by that?
So when Roslyn came into my life, I had a lot of pain and suffering that I wasn't able to articulate. And she gave me a way to be able to see and understand and give a meaning to why it is I was carrying this energy that wasn't mine. And it wasn't mine to carry. It was my grandmother's story. And she didn't want to pass it on to me, so it would take me away from the things that I think she could see in me. My grandmother was a very strong woman, and I'm very lucky that her blood runs through my veins. So if my nan can go through those times, then I'm sure as hell going to make sure that she knows that her granny has got a voice that reminds everyone around that she is still alive and well, and she's right here on my shoulders, and I'm pretty fortunate that I can show her that the past has not won. It's, sorry, nan, or to those others, you didn't win. The love will overcome. And the only way to get through to that place, unfortunately, was through forgiveness. I had to forgive those who hurt my grandparents. Because if I didn't do that and show compassion, then I'd forever be chained internally and not be able to free myself and forgive myself for not being there to protect her. So, is that okay, Eddie? Yes. Thank you. Anybody else? Okay. Yeah.
Sean, the last 4 to 5 weeks, okay, I've met you 3 times on 3 different days at the monastery, at the Buddhist monastery in Serpentine.
Yeah.
Can you tell us what makes you interested to go there?
Eddie, there's one thing about you, my friend, that everyone in here, I'm sure, has very much got the same relationship. When they're around you, you're very much a person who definitely wants to unite everybody in the room and make them feel welcome. And the energy you put out there, regardless, you're consistent. You'll always come over and say hello to everyone. You'll always say a little bit of a joke, or you'll want a question about this, and then you're inquisitive about that, and you make people feel as though that they've been seen, and you can't make people feel they're counted.
Thank you.
So why wouldn't I want to be down there? I look forward to seeing you, Eddie. And
you have a good energy, is it, to make you go there?
There are some days people say, Eddie will ask you questions and he'll keep you yarning about everything, and he'll go on to the next one, and then give him a little bit, Sean, he'll take some more. But you know what, Eddie? I do a lot of talking in my community, and it's great for someone to take the lead. I love to just sit and listen. It's one gift my uncle gave me, or I've always had. So talk away, Eddie. And I'll look forward to seeing you when I'm down there. And that's, you're just one of the people that make that place what it is. It's a collective, and there's many people down there who I can tell you I look forward to seeing when I go back down and be in the bush and to hear the birds and to see how wonderful people are giving and nurturing one another. And it doesn't matter which background you're from, you walk into that room, and to hear the monks' prayer, that rhythm is phenomenal. It gives you goosebumps. And so what I'll do is I'll do a little, I should have done a welcome from the get-go, but I was in the process of composing myself, because I knew Collingwood was on the edge of the seat screaming and yelling. But so what I'll do is I'll just do a little cleansing, and we'll say, Warawira Buya Kanan, bad spirit, go away. Can you say it with me? Wara? Wira? Buyakanan. Buyakanan. Yeah, bad spirit, go away. Then we say, Murichwaran dat yening, Krobradan, Krobradan, yen yen yako. Murichwaran dat yening, Murich, really good spirit, come sit dat yening on our skin. And when you feel the goosebumps going over your body, that's the old Demagamanga, our old spirits, dancing with your spirit child inside you, saying, hey, don't forget us, we're here. This boy will keep you safe with food and water, no worries, but us, we'll keep you safe for eternity. Nichjen Naganak, Banyu, Demagamanga, Manga, Jun, we walk in the footsteps of you, our old people, I say our we. There is no separation in any way, shape or form in our languages. All languages, when you go back beyond the hurt, the pain, separation. So for us, it's really important for you to know that for thousands upon thousands of years, this culture is rightfully yours in any way, shape or form, if you choose to walk in with love and graciousness. Wanju wanju nija wajak nyunga buja. Wanju wanju nija wajak mudis yogas. Does it sound like I'm singing? Wanju, wanju, nija, wajak, nyunga, buja, buja, buja. There's no separation in our way of transmitting. Wanju, wanju, welcome, welcome. Murich is really good. Yoga is our women. Murich Maman is our men. Murich Kulinga. We're a Kulinga inside you. To nyunga, buja, country. I'm very humbled to share culture with you. Let's just for a moment say thank you, Uncle Noel, for having the courage to maintain that energy. Because I could tell you now, I often look back and think to myself, my life would be so much different if my uncle didn't take that moment to say, oh, I think I might take this on. And I'm sure that little chubby boy, whoever he is in his life, he might turn around and go, you know what, there was one person that actually made a difference in my life. I'm not really sure, but I'd love to have met him again, maybe one day. But I can tell you now, I think with heart on my hand, without ego or sense of, you know, selfishness, I've been lucky to be in presence of so many beautiful people who I've nurtured. And that's enough for me. I'll keep going, but I could put my head on the pillow right now and say, you know what, I think I've done all right. Well, thank you again for having me. Thank you.
Come on, guys, sing the pie. Good old pie.